think I've learnt more from my failings than anything else. It's okay to fail as long as you learn from it and hopefully don't repeat it time and time again.
Welcome to the Grow Tribe. I'm Melissa McGowan and I have been supporting teams and people grow for over 2 decades. So it might sound like I have it all figured out, but that is far from the truth. In my early 40s, I experienced my great energy crisis. It brought me to my knees. I was living and leading in survival zone, either doing or feeling healthy, but never at the same time. For myself, my family, and my career, I realized I needed to make some changes, and my biggest learning was to manage my energy. I felt more connected and alive, and I became the practicing chief energy officer of my life. And this is where the real growth started. I needed a tribe. I looked up and I realized I was not alone, and neither are you. Go to Grow is about connection with real and messy growth. The failing, the learning, the healing, the vulnerability, the bravery, and the aliveness, not just the glossy outcomes. We'll help you connect the dots between your energy and the impact you desire to have in your life. Our guests help create space for you to grow. They provide insights, inspiration, and information. We'll call them the practicing chief energy officers of their lives too. Go to Grow helps you navigate the rocky road towards greater growth for you. Are you feeling burned out? Well, you're not alone, and I can help you. I'd love you to join the Chief Energy Officer program. You'll reduce your burnout symptoms so you can survive and thrive in your career and your personal life. We will banish burnout in 8 weeks, starting in October. So if you need a roadmap that actually works for you, then check out the roadmap deal. This week only, it's 50% off the full price. So that expires the 24th of September. But actually, for the Grow Tribe, I'll give you a couple of extra days to the 26th of September or until the spots fill up. So check out the link below, and I would love you to join us and become the Chief Energy Officer of your life, banish burnout, and see you later survival for good. So I was remembering back to when I was invited to an evening with a supplier. Now, I used to get a lot of invitations like that. They were pretty common. But this one caught my attention. It had an interesting mix of sort of an agenda, a dinner, a discussion, a talk, and some networking, all in support of a not-for-profit organization that specifically does work around mental health. I accepted that invitation. The dinner was lovely. I even recall that the wine was good. The company was nice. But what was great and really impactful was the talk on mental health, specifically around anxiety and depression, how it impacts people in a whole range of ways, often unnoticed to others, and sadly sometimes, you know, noticed in very severe ways. Brave leaders at that event shared their real personal stories, and that was what was so compelling, as it so often is when we hear about the lived experience of others. They talked about their business challenges, suffering and dealing with deep depression, how it affected them, their business, their livelihood, their families. You know, it brought up the discussion around the very murky nature and the challenging nature of mental health in the workplace, the stigma, how it impacts people, and of course, you know, how it flows through to performance as well. And that conversation continued well into the night. And it was just such a impactful evening. I remember it well. And I went into work the very next day and in my leadership capacity sort of declared, you know, we need to do more around here to support our people, to help our managers specifically build more awareness and skills on how to help people navigate their mental health, when to refer them to someone else and to whom, and what tools and resources, you know, we could use to support them manage that performance when mental health is a contributor. So we contacted some external partners. We undertook a significant amount of training. We invested our time and energy and some money. And we also embraced the powerful simplicity of Are You OK Day, which I think is in Australia. I'm not sure if it's in the other parts of the world. But this started for us
a multi-year and ongoing mission to reduce stigma around mental health and make our environment more inclusive and recognise some of those very blurred lines that we're all treading every day. Now, my guest today organised and hosted that event that I attended all those years ago. It impacted me and consequently the organisation I was working for. It's a great example of leadership impact. Leadership impact goes to the heart of how we as leaders cause others to behave and take action. Now, we're not responsible for others, we know that, but we have a powerful influence if we want to. It's a responsibility that I know you listeners, like me, we don't take lightly. Now, we also know that we're going to stuff it up, and that's just what happens. But sometimes we get it really right, and our leadership has that sort of positive ripple effect, which was the case. And that ripple has many streams in all sorts of different directions. We impact each other every day with our energy and our actions. Now, I'm pleased to stand here and say, you know, I never subscribed to the fragmented kind of siloed work and life approach. You and we, like, we are leaders in our own lives. And you know, when I say that, I'm not talking about a position. I'm talking about the position you have in your life. Like, that's what we do every day. We're integrating to the best of our ability so that we can feel more whole and in our integrity. My undergrad was in science and physical education back in the day, and I worked in the fitness industry and focused on well-being. Then I moved into business and development. I've always coached. Throughout all of that, I was coaching, and that's my passion, is helping people connect the dots, move and shift and grow from where they are in their leadership and in their life. And I often found that in corporate settings in particular and business, that development focus can just really center in the kind of above the neck area, right? Yeah, the head. And we know we are more than that. We are these whole people. And the real magic is when we get below the neck into recognizing that we are emotional beings. So we explore with curiosity and compassion and hear it go to grow. Like, we love hearing about the choices people make, conscious and unconscious, voluntary and not, their challenges, their learnings, and yes, their pivots. And I am going to use that word because I used that word before it sort of became an overused word. But, you know, they're those moments, they're those defining moments that when you look back, you're like, wow, that was a pivot in my life. So I want to welcome my guest today, a leader in life, Paul Hallam, and I want to thank him for that impact he had on me and others by advocating and supporting mental health for such a long time with intention and influence. And so today we're going to dive into Paul's leadership and growth in his life. So welcome to the Grow Tribe, Paul.
Thank you very much for having me, Mel, and thanks for that introduction. I do remember that day, that night, evening, fondly. It was meant to go for a couple of hours, and I think Jeff Kennett, who was chairman of Beyond Blue, had us all entertained for many, many hours and many glasses of wine. But I suppose not to start, I don't want to start on such a negative note, but there was something that, you know, I've always been very conscious of mental health. My father, growing up, had depression. We didn't talk about it. We knew something was wrong, but we didn't talk about it. But I do want to talk about someone called Luke Riley. And the toughest day of my life, of my 50-odd years, is the day that I had to take a phone call one Sunday night to hear that Luke, who was a valued team member and part of the Six Degrees family for about 8 years, had taken his own life. And then the next day I had to go and let everyone in the organisation know that Luke was no longer with us. And, you know, that was a real life example of dealing with mental health and how bad it can get. And, you know, there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about Luke and whether I could have done things differently. But, you know, that is the worst case scenario of what can happen. But, you know, I think the world is changing and, you know, it is the stigma is going. I wouldn't say it's gone. But I think also it's great now that people can actually talk about how they're feeling, because as people say, you know, if you've got a broken arm or you know, a runny nose or a cold, or you go to the doctor and get it sorted out. But if you aren't feeling right or can't get out of bed,
because your mental health is not there, it is okay, and it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to get it out there. And you know, what we at Six Degrees and have tried to do is actually change organisations' view around mental health policy. And I think it's really, really important subject, and probably no more important than right now, as you know, Australia is in lockdown for the sixth time here in Victoria, and most people are not doing okay. But you know, I think it's a really good opener. I would probably want to open on such a downer, and hopefully we can talk about other areas.
Yeah, but this is about real and messy growth here, and we do kind of like to get to the heart of it. So I appreciate you sharing what was obviously such an impactful and challenging situation and time, and yet translating that into what, as you said, an impact on other organisations and people in a very positive sense, and showcasing that we can run great commercial organisations that truly have impacts, you know, beyond that kind of core part of our business, which we can, you know, we can talk more on. So thank you for sharing that.
And to your point, as far as, you know, physical health and all the other things that create good mental health, it is really good business practice. If you've got a mentally healthy workforce, you know that it is, less people are going to be taking sick days, and you're going to be getting much more out of your people if they're in the right space.
Yeah. And the great thing is, you know, the how on that, you know, can be sometimes overwhelming for people and companies, and I think that's the point, is that there's a lot of resources and support out there, and it's not something that leaders have to figure out on their own. Yeah, absolutely. So, Paul, here we are back in freaking lockdown whatever in Victoria, and okay, quite a bit of Australia lockdown at the moment. I like to ask people first just how they're going. So how is your energy today?
My energy today is okay. I wouldn't say it's great. And it's definitely been worse through the last 18 months. When I'm being good to myself, and when I spoke about this before we came on air, and that is getting up, doing some exercise, and doing all the things to look after yourself. Our new CEO, sorry, not our new CEO, Susie's been our CEO for over 2 years now. She led a meditation with the company this morning, and as I said to you, I know it's a practice that I should do every day, but I don't. But when I do, gee, I feel good. So I'm doing okay. We'll be glad when we can get out and socialise and do all the things that I love, rather than being in lockdown. But you know, the people I feel for most for at the moment is my kids, and you know, a big focus on is making sure that they're sort of not too affected by all of this. But yeah. No, I'm doing okay. It's giving me some
opportunity.
Speaking
of things you enjoy,
yeah,
let's tap into that bit of that joy and that aliveness that we feel when we are in the zone of doing things, you know, that we love. And I'd ask you that is, when do you feel really alive in your life?
The single time that I feel most alive in my life is when I'm skiing. And it is the only time I really believe that I'm 100% present. It is where my body is out of my head. To you know, put on a pair of snow skis and go down a mountain is the time where I'm most alive. Music is probably the next for me, as far as taking me to a place whether that's live music or, you know, sitting around uninterrupted, whether that's in the car or at home, are probably the two things for me.
Yeah, great. Like in your body, and you know, the music, a kind of emotion connection, so huge, isn't it? So good. So, Paul, just share with us, for all of us listening in today from wherever you are, and welcome Grow Tribe, welcome back. Just tell us a little bit about your background, Paul. Just help people get to know you a little better.
Absolutely. Melbourne boy through and through, I wasn't that good at school, Mel. I'm undiagnosed ADHD, struggled at school. I went to many schools, many of Melbourne's private schools and some regional boarding schools. I did finish school, then went to university, but dropped out of university to
set up my own business. I have tried a number of different business ventures. But at about the age of 26, we sold one of the businesses, but all our shares were in escrow. So I had a massive credit card debt and no money and needed a job. And then I was living in Sydney at the time, and a number of recruitment companies asked me to join them. Had never really thought about recruitment, but then found that I'd sort of landed in that. I had thought about it, sorry, that's not quite true, but had landed in that, and then went back to Melbourne to work for one of the largest recruitment companies, was with them for 8 years, and then decided to set up on my own. And that was about 17 years ago, and have built one of Australia's best, without sounding too arrogant, one of Australia's best executive recruitment and executive search companies. We have offices in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane, about 90 people, and up until 2 years ago I was CEO of that business. And you know, I think that business was right for me because you know, my passion and my superpower is around human connection and connecting people. And I've done that all my life. And you know, it is not something, it's something that's innate rather than something that I have to work on. And I'm a very, very curious person. I'm a very passionate person. You know, that my greatest love is the people in my tribe and the people around me. I also have a passion for helping those that aren't as privileged, especially as I get older. My passion for our First Nation people is something that's very, very close to my heart.
I would say, let it land, man. Like, you know how we say, oh, I don't want to big note myself. Like, that is a great achievement, yeah, like what you've built. And I love hearing this, you know, kind of zone, you know, I call it the grow zone or zone of genius, whatever you want to call it, like recognizing that connection, and whether it's connecting people and opportunities or people and people or however that works, like connecting is your superpower. And you have, you know, really been flowing that for some time. So let that land. I love it. But I also just want to quickly off the back of that say, you know, what message might you have for the parents tuning in whose own, you know, fears are playing out around their kids doing well at school in the traditional sense? Like, I think you said, like, I was not good. And here I am congratulating you on amazing sort of business and leadership, you know, achievement and obviously that entrepreneurial spirit. So what thoughts have you got for those parents? And I know they're out there because many of us do this because they're our own fears about their kids not maybe being, you know, good enough at school.
It's a really good question, and it's a question I, as a parent of three kids, 4 to 12, I think of a lot. And I think, when I was growing up, got so focused on the marks and the academia side. I do believe education has changed. You know, it's still pointed that way and still going to university, but you know, I think the most important thing that you can teach your or give your children is the ability, is self-confidence and self-belief, and the ability that whatever they give a crack at, they can achieve. And that doesn't have to be getting 100% in maths or physics, or getting an A in maths and physics, because that was never ever possible and never going to happen with me. I think but making sure that they are curious, making sure that they have a good work ethic, and letting them be who they're going to be rather than pointing them in the direction. You know, I have no doubt my parents wanted me to finish school, wanted me to finish university, wanted me to join a big four accounting firm and be partner one day, and that's because that's what they thought the right career path and the right way it was meant to be. Clearly, the world has changed, and I think it's the advice I would say is just instill the right values and let them be and let them shine to who they can be and their best potential rather than the traditional way.
Yeah, it's like the biggest growth assignment for us as, you know, parents is truly letting go a bit, isn't it? Like loosening that grip on allowing our kids to be their authentic selves. And I mean, dare I say, we're all stuffing up every day on it. Like, there's no doubt about it. But the ones who are willing to be a bit more conscious and aware about that, and in terms of doing some work on ourselves to recognize like what our conditioning's been around some of these, so helpful. And I love the fact that kids these days learn about the growth mindset in school and the growth pit and all this sort of stuff, because what you just described about openness and curiosity and, you know, having a go, and, you know, that's the growth mindset. Yet if we're holding on so tight as parents, then, you know, we are choking the growth mindset in our kids, despite the fact that that's what we want for them. So it's such an interesting topic. But I want to pick up on, you know, you mentioned transition, as in you were the CEO of your company till a couple of years ago. So you've been through a significant transition. And as we know, transition has that sort of metaphor of, you know, we've left one side of the river, we're not yet at the other, and we're kind of swimming in the middle. And when you were transitioning, I'm just wondering, you know, what you've noticed or learned about yourself, because, you know, we take these leaps and they're exciting times, but they're challenging times. So, yeah, tell us a little bit about your transition and what you've learned about yourself through that time.
It's a good question, Mel, because the transition wasn't the way it was planned, and that was because a global pandemic came, and, you know, I was there was a transition of Susie and I as far as CEO, that we would do that role jointly for a period of time, and then she was ready to push me away and get out of the way and let her run it, which you know, she did very, very quickly and has done an incredible job, I must say. And then a global pandemic came, and then it was, you know, we've got to do everything we can to not save the business. The business wasn't going down, but make sure that everyone's jobs was looked after and the business continued to thrive. Now, I talk about, you know, I've never seen recruitment so bad as it was in April last year, and I've never seen it so good as it is right now and has been for the last 7 or 8 months. So the transition was interrupted because of COVID, and I have to say it knocked my confidence a little bit. You know, I was very clear on what I was doing when I was moving aside, and, you know, I was still going to be involved in Six Degrees more, you know, a couple of days a week in a strategy and client relationship perspective, but I was then going to be going on and doing my own thing with some other ideas and entrepreneurial ventures that I was very, very keen to pursue. They were put on hold, and it's only now that I'm getting those back up and running. You know, that I suppose what it taught me, or the things I learned about myself, is I thought I was unflappable, but a global pandemic you know, especially lockdown, you know, it did have an effect on me. You know, it's, you know, first time in a long time that I actually went and saw a psychologist. And I suppose I've learned a lot about myself through that process as well. You know, I am actually much more centered now, and much more considered now. I think one of the early things the psychologist said to me as I went through this process is, she said to me, your anger has served you very well. And when she said anger, she didn't mean aggression, but my anger through drive and wanting to do things. She said, but you're at a stage now where it's probably not serving you as well. And I found that probably the most interesting insight that she has given me, and the work that I needed to do as a parent and as a professional now, to be a little bit more aware of myself and my emotions and a little bit more considered. And it's also taught me that, you know, I don't necessarily have to work as hard or as intensely as I used to get exactly the same outcomes. So it has taught me a lot. It's taught me a lot about myself. It's also taught me a lot about other people, good, bad, and indifferent.
Yeah, great. Well done for taking that opportunity for continued growth. What do they say? New level, new devil. When you mentioned feeling more centered, what helps you feel more grounded in your kind of leadership these days? You know, I often talk to people about, overwhelm, it comes up all the time and it's inevitable, we're going to go there. But yeah, what helps you kind of keep yourself grounded?
I am most grounded when I do my morning routine, and that always entails some what's called pull time, and you know, whether that is meditation, whether that is 15 or 20 minutes of reading a book, whether that is playing guitar, which I've tried to learn or have been learning for 12 years and I'm still terrible at it, Mel, but you know, some time for me and then some physical activity is really, really important, and then also taking some time out during the day just to collect and think. I historically have worked at such a frantic pace, ideas going on around in my mind, and I know I frustrate people with the way I think and the way I work, but now I've learned a little bit more of taking some time to think and be rather than think, just do. And that's when I'm at
my
best.
So selfish, Paul.
So selfish.
Or, you know. And I'm, for those listening, of course, where sometimes I sort of let my kids know, they're like, are you being sarcastic right now, Mum, or not? I'm like, yes, I am. Sarcasm warning. But, you know, isn't it? It's just, even as we say it, it's so obvious. Like, we can't give what we don't have, like how it helps us get a bit more structured in our thinking. So, you know, I do love the fact that this is a theme that comes up, particularly around the morning routine and what we notice later in the day.
The one other thing I will add, Mel, is I am a very good planner. David Braham, my business partner, said to me one day, you are the most disorganized, organized person that I know. I think he is right, but you know, I am also my best. That the time I spend either last thing at night or first thing in the morning, where I plan my day, plan my priorities, often plan my week, but you know, I am a very big planner, and when I plan, I'm more in control and get better outcomes.
Absolutely. Yeah, look, I'm a fan of planning too, and I'm not, you know, necessarily like the most organized, structured person either, but you know, it's like you just said, you want to feel in control. You want to also, I also want to feel a sense of freedom. I want to feel a sense of confidence in achieving what matters. So to me, it comes down to planning, you know, and it's just a little bit each week equals a lot. I've just done my plan this morning, actually. But, you know,
do you use a framework?
I do.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
What type of framework?
It's a simple one that I've developed for myself over the years. And I teach that to others in my Chief Energy Officer programs, and then I have some ways to help people build and stack some habits around that. So I've just loved reading through this morning my clients doing their, you know, 5-minute growth wrap up at the end of last week in the system, and just seeing the impact of week on week progress around this as you're taking into consideration how you want to feel, what you want to achieve, and you know, and working through a few other things during the week. So yeah, I do. I'm very passionate about it. To me, it's one of the things that people make assumptions in the workplace, that we've got this capacity thing and self-management sorted out. And after doing it for a long time, I believe that's the biggest opportunity, and some are taking it right now, is to upgrade the system that is ourselves, and to do it in a way that makes it work for you. You know, it's flexible, but we're too often living in that survival zone where we're just reacting to the stuff around us, and we get to the end of each week and, you know, we're tired, we've been busy, yet we're frustrated because we're not feeling like we've actually achieved anything important. And I know it because I was there years ago, and this is how I sort of dug my way out. So, yeah, be passionate about that. But, Paul, what was coming up for me before when you were talking was resilience. I know we sort of throw that word around a lot, but when we've been in significant, you know, high responsibility leadership positions, we have the opportunity to think about what experiences really helped build our resilience. And I know from the work I've done over the years, I often hear people talk about, you know, the decisions that they wish they'd made and the learning they had from that, or the leadership opportunity that they took or they didn't, or that investment that, you know, they're so glad they made. What comes up for you around some of the things that have really built resilience in your leadership over time?
I think personal experience, and I think I've learnt more from my failings than anything else. It's okay to fail as long as you learn from it and hopefully don't repeat it time and time again. So there are different ventures or different things that we've tried that haven't been successful, and that builds resilience. I think if we're going through a global pandemic right now and in a recruitment business, you would think that that's the worst thing that can happen. I'm still a little bit baffled by why we're doing so well. I have worked it out. But if I look back to the global financial crisis, that was a very, very tough time. We were a business that was probably only 4 years old, and that was a time where we had 20-25 people, and every day I was thinking, this could be an unmitigated disaster. So I think those type of things.
Was there a sort of, and maybe there wasn't a key learning, but was there something on the back of the GFC that you now can see did help you strengthen your muscles?
I do remember, one of the things that is so important to our business right now and was so important to our business back then is culture. And our culture is quite unique. And one of the things that I remember saying to one of my mentors is that we've made a commitment, we're not going to make anyone redundant. He said to me, Paul, don't be making that commitment because you might be making 5 people redundant to save your business and make sure that 25 people aren't out of a job. So, there were definite lessons. The other thing is, I would say this is all about growing. The one thing as far as growth for me is having mentors. I've always had great mentors, some for a period of time, some throughout my career. And some to learn a specific area. I remember when about 7 or 8 years ago, I really wanted to learn about the tech world and then sought out some people to teach me all thing tech. The mentors that have served me incredibly well and continue to do so throughout my career. And at the same time now, Mel, I'm in the privileged position that I can actually do that for other people as well. But the mentoring is really important.
Yeah, I mean, you caught a few things there. The no doubt experience is the language of development. And mentoring comes up a lot for people, but you've just given a great example of it's really powerful when there's a clear reason or it's a bit more specific in terms of what you're trying to get out of it. I think often people just think, I need a mentor, and they're not really coming at it. Is it a skill? Is it experience? Is it a behavior? What's the thing? So that kind of leads me to the question of, who or what has been most impactful for you on your growth?
That's a really interesting question. Can I put it down to one or two people? Probably not. Before I started Six Degrees, I didn't feel that I had incredible mentors and leaders in the organisations that I worked with. I had great managers, and they were very good at managing outcomes. But did they lead and inspire? No, they didn't. And probably why I'm so passionate about what great leadership looks like and leadership in Australia, because I think sometimes that we are really let down, whether that's from a political standpoint, but also in a corporate point of view. I'm inspired by Susie McInerney, our new CEO, and I look at the work that she has done over the last 2.5 years in leading this business and taking it to the next level. In many, many ways, she's doing a much better job than I ever did. I've learnt a lot as far as communication and calmness, being calm in crisis. I think I also have learnt a lot of people from a lot of people. I know someone that mentors me in the tech space, Kate Dinnan. She runs a corporate comms business called Character and Distinction.
And, you know, just in what she has done as far as developing me and helping me understand the whole tech world, that then led me to go to Israel and Silicon Valley to really immerse myself in these type of things. You know, there are different people along the way that have inspired me and mentored me in different areas.
Great. Love hearing about that. I was thinking that, you know, you get... You and your, you know, your colleagues at Six Degrees that work in the talent and recruitment space, you get an inside view often to so many people's like careers and growth and where they tend to get stuck. And one thing that I was thinking about is that fear that many of us have where we can end up sort of tolerating or settling kind of the better the devil you know sort of thing. And yet there are some that kind of access the growth and the risk taking a bit earlier in their careers. And I was just wondering what thoughts you might have around that or what advice you might have for people considering change right now. And we know discomfort is prevailing anyway, but they might be thinking, well, can I handle more? But, you know, you really get an inside view there. So just any thoughts you might have on
that? Yeah, it's a really good one. And I think, I think Australia has been very conservative, and I think obviously the change in the world, especially with technology, is that age no longer limits you as far as your ability to do something, and also it's okay to fail. You know, the advice I would give anyone is that if you are wanting to do something or wanting to pursue something that makes you truly happy rather than the expectations of whether society or your parents or your university put on you, is do it and do it now. Because we all know that you do what you're most passionate about is what you will do best. Do I regret that I didn't do it earlier or set up Six Degrees earlier? Yes, I probably do. I wouldn't change anything. But the advice I would give is if there's things you want to do, just go and do it. And it's okay to fail.
Yeah. And I think right now, like, it sounds like there's actually quite a few opportunities around for people. And I don't know if that's in every market around the world, but when the market's good, this is the time for great talent to get out there and at least explore, isn't it? Like, if you're not going to make a move, like, don't just have your head down. And I think I was guilty of that for years, certainly earlier in my career. And I know a lot of females are that idea of I'm just going to work hard and then see what comes up. So, yeah, pop your heads up, everyone, and have a bit of a look around.
Mm. Yeah, the other thing that I think is historically, you know, definitely when I started in my career, if you were 25, you didn't have a say. You know, and you had to basically, do the time in order to be promoted. Now I meet, especially in the tech world, some of the most amazing minds and the most amazing people that are 23 to 28 years of age. And I don't know the demographic of the Grow Tribe, but especially if there are young people out there, you have so much to offer and so much to teach us, and really, really important that you actually take the bull by the horns and get out there and have a crack.
Yeah, I mean, that's why companies are doing this reverse mentoring, you know what I mean? We've got like senior execs being mentored by sort of early in careers. I love that as well.
And you know, some really good organisations that are putting young people on their boards. You know, I do remember reading a Harvard Business Review case study on feminine hygiene products, and the board was made up of, I think, 8 white 40 to 60-year-old men. The new chairman came in and changed the makeup of that board, and they went to number one in a very, very short period of time because you know, the right people were making the right decisions.
Yeah, well, it's often that thing is like if we're talking about something and we're trying to embody something in our culture, our strategy, and then we look around and our environment or our leadership team is not reflective of that, you know, that gap is going to create real issues in the organisation or the outcomes. Paul, at this point, just talking about the fact that you've done some contemplation and some growth over the last, you know, year or two or ongoing, but you've sort of been diving into a new level of personal growth. Have you considered Any story about yourself that perhaps you'd previously believed that you now question? Story or belief, perhaps?
Yeah, and I think I alluded to it earlier, is that the amount of work you have to do, and when I say the amount of work, the hours that you have to do, especially the last 2 years has taught me that, I still am an absolute believer in hard work, and no one has really achieved anything without hard work, but hard work does not mean long hours. The amount of time that I spent historically in the office working, when I could have been a better father to my two oldest children, and been more flexible and worked a lot smarter rather than longer hours, I think that's probably the big change, is that you can be at all levels, work really smart, and get the same outcome, rather than being in the office at 7 o'clock in the morning and still being there at 8 o'clock at night type thing. I think
we buy into these unconscious beliefs around sort of what the ideal worker and leader looks like, and then sometimes they get reinforced in our organisations, or even in society. But I don't know about you, but I can really relate to what you said. And one way that shows up for me is the difference between that sort of forced productivity and doing, which kind of comes down to hours, versus a more expansive approach, like I'm kind of inspired to do this and I've sat on something for a couple of days, which was painful, but now I've got a different idea or a way of unlocking it or a different thought, which for me has been a real change over the years, because it was more about kind of reactivity and responsiveness. And that felt kind of limiting, and the other now feels more expansive, but it is a different way of working. It doesn't come down to, I guess, that belief that, I have to be putting in a lot of hours to be good enough at what I'm doing. Yeah.
And I think the other part is by also taking that approach through delegation, you're giving people incredible experiences to do things that they may not have been exposed to or got the opportunity to do. I think good leadership is also about delegation giving people the opportunity to grow and learn by doing things that they haven't been done before, rather than thinking you have to do it all.
I mean, therein lies the growth opportunity pretty much for everyone I coach, and I think all leaders, is to become more coach-like and, stop rescuing and truly both hold our people accountable and develop them at the same time, and so that then...
And I would say it's the other way. Develop them, teach them the way, and then hold them to account.
Yeah, and I say both, because I think there's almost this thing of like, there's a mindset sometimes of kind of one or the other, like I call it hands-on delegation. So it's like, yes, I'm delegating, I'm developing, but I'm also learning to hold people accountable, and I've got to stop interfering and kind of rescuing and then sabotaging my own success of getting out of my comfort zone and doing some higher level work for myself. And so this is the great development opportunity to truly become more coach-like. What reflection have you got around that for you? Because I just think it's one of the most powerful levers we can really pull if we're wanting to do this long-term growth for ourselves and our teams. But it's challenging for people.
Yeah, I think the reflection of how I could have done it better is again looking how many reports I had and how many people I was coaching, and being more and having a better framework for coaching and leading, rather than fireside chats or clear meeting, looking at objectives as the accountability. As I've got looked a lot more in the last 2 or 3 years, there is so much information out there. There is no reason not to learn anything, whether it's podcasts and YouTube and TED Talks and all those type of things. But there are really good frameworks out there to help you coach and develop your people. And not one of them is right. It's what works for you and that person.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's nothing like a good bit of implementation support and accountability, whether you're doing that with others in a leadership program, you're doing it with peers to hold each other accountable, you're working with a coach, whatever that looks like. And a great book for those who might be interested in building their coaching muscle is The Coaching Habit by Michael Bungay Stanier. It's very accessible. It's not about becoming an executive coach. It's really great. Paul, it's nearly time for us to wrap up, but seeker or reactor now in terms of growth? Do you seek it out or do you respond and react as comes up?
I am a seeker, Mel. Someone said to me recently, as I look at it, the whole personal development space is sort of like the new weight loss. There's so much of it, it's deciphering what suits you and what is right for you. I have now been very strict in my diary. I now put sleep actually as in my diary, from when I go to bed to when I wake up, and I now seek out personal development. There's a time I recently signed up to a thing called Mind Valley. I don't know if you know of Mind Valley, every Sunday morning I have an hour where I subscribe to Mind Valley. So I do some type of course every Sunday morning, and I now put in my diary more as far as the personal development and personal growth than I ever have.
Yeah, and thanks for mentioning that you put, if we say sleep and movement are the just foundation of recharging our batteries on a physical level, and then certainly on a mental level, development, planning, reading, listening to podcasts, doing a course online, a great way to recharge the mental batteries. And the physical and the emotional, the mental, the purpose, they're all interconnected. We say these things are important, yet where are they on our calendar? And I challenge people and say, even if you know that you're going to do it, put it on your calendar, because it's just symbolic. You can also share that, print it off, put it on the fridge, share that to hold yourself accountable around like stop work times, that kind of thing. So that's great. Paul, final question. As you've been transitioning, of course, things haven't gone as planned, and perhaps they wouldn't have exactly anyway, but certainly we've had this external factor in the mix. But as we change, new doors open, and those doors bring new, connection, experiences, all sorts of things. Like what's the opportunity ahead for you? What's on your radar right now? And do you have any sort of goals in place around anything that might be interesting for us to hear about what's next for you?
So my objective once I handed over to Susie was always to be working on things rather than in things. So I have a number of ventures, whether that's my wine business that I'm involved with some friends with, called Opia, O-P-I-A-H, best Chardonnay and Pinot in Australia, voted 2019 and 2018 by me. Yarra Valley Pinot and Chardonnay. So I'm very involved in that. I suppose the big thing for me, Mel, is that I am working on a business which is around some technology to build better connectedness. And I think, one of the saddest things about life right now, one of the good things, but also one of the sad things is social media and the amount of time people spend on social media. I find the term in itself quite funny, because it's one of the most antisocial things you can do, is sitting there looking at a screen on social media. So I'm developing some technology that helps people network better and be better connected with humans, which is the way we should be, not stuck behind screens. So maybe that's another time for us to get together and talk about that and the plans for that. But that is my my next objective or next passion goal project. Project, which I'm pretty immersed in right now.
Yeah, great. Well, Paul, I really appreciate you essentially tapping into your kind of leadership legacy, because as we know, like, we're leading in companies, in teams, at home with our families, in our community, in our environment. So I appreciate you being open and very real with us today. And I will put some links in here. I didn't know about the wine. Awesome. I also will put in the link to Beyond Blue, which is the organization we mentioned at the start around mental health. I'd encourage all of the Grow Tribe just to tune into the impact that you're having in your leadership. Is it happening by default or design? And again, just remind us that we haven't gone through, we're not going through all this change, not to take the opportunity and seize this opportunity for some personal growth and upgrading our own operating system, not necessarily adding lots of new skills and behaviours, but just making the best with what we've got. And there's lots of support out there. So thanks so much, Paul. I really enjoyed our chat, and I know that the Grow Tribe will be feeling supported by your growth journey. So thanks so much for sharing.
Thanks, Belle. It's been great to be a part of it.
Thanks so much for being here and being part of the Grow Tribe. It would be amazing if you shared this podcast with others at home, at work, gave it a rate and review in Apple Podcasts, and shared any ideas about what you want to hear more about or who you want to hear from. I love to hear your updates. If you're interested in learning about how to become a Chief Energy Officer, you're looking to fuel your impact and your performance, could be you, could be your team, have a look at the link in the show notes about where to start. And as always, drop me an email if you're looking for any support or you've got any insights that you want to share on growth. It's Melissa, M-E-L-I-S-S-A, at go2grow.com.au. Thanks, everyone.